Hi, friend, it's Jessica. Welcome back to the show. So, this episode has a lot of good stuff packed into it. There are practical things like setting up your morning and evening routines, and more philosophical ideas, including this really amazing metaphor for people that I've been thinking about ever since recording this episode. I actually started doing the three things that Brent recommends in a morning routine. And although I was initially skeptical because of the simplicity of it, I've been finding it really helpful to just start the morning off on the right foot. I think you'll find that Brent's optimism and energy are inspiring, and I hope that this episode helps you consider what's most important in your life. Even if you feel like you're late to the game, as Brent calls it, please enjoy the show and get ready to learn something useful. Hello, and welcome to Guru Please, the show about pushing the limits of life and stepping up to live with more meaning, more purpose, and more passion. I'm your host, Jessica Sun. I'm pleased to introduce Brent Magnuson. Brent is a former U.S. Army combat engineer, a speaker, and the author of Roger Up, the mission-ready blueprint to crush the morning, own the day, and become the best version of you. He is also a self-proclaimed human test subject for peak social, mental, and physical development, and a soon-to-be coach. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Well, thank you so much.
Let's begin by talking about what your routines are, because that's what you write about in your book. And you actually claim that the first hour of our day is magic. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, more specifically, like the first 30 minutes. I'm obsessed with the first 30 minutes of the day. And I humbly think every single person that wants to be productive, efficient, successful, and happy should be obsessed with the first 30 minutes of the day, because it sets the tone for the whole rest of the day, for the whole other 16 to 18 hours you're going to be awake. And, you know, getting in from the military and after the military, transitioning into right around 2010, really getting interested and obsessed with personal development. I was fortunate enough to meet Tony Robbins in 2010 and really started getting into a lot of what he was doing. And I was able to take a lot of that and combine that with all the valuable lessons I learned in the Army. One of the things I started realizing right away is the most successful people, the most productive people, and arguably the happiest people that I was getting access to, not just had a morning routine, but every single one of them had a plan every single morning. All these guys and gals knew, at least for the first 30 minutes of the day, what they were doing. And it was non-negotiable. And again, the more people I started getting access to, people like Tony Robbins, people like Tim Ferriss, people like Jason Redman, who wrote the foreword to my book. He spent 21 years as a Navy SEAL. He's a New York Times bestselling author, a prolific speaker. Getting access to guys like this really put things into perspective for me. More so than I'd even thought, because when you're around it, it's contagious, and it's even more clear that all these people have a plan every single day when they wake up. They don't haphazardly go through their morning. There's no, maybe I'll hit snooze a few times. I mean, most of the people that are operating at that level, they don't even want to talk about snooze buttons. They hate snooze buttons like most people hate coronavirus. And it's these super successful, big time producers, effective, efficient people that are also all happy that wake up and have a plan. And I'm pretty obsessed with that myself.
And I imagine that everyone has a very different plan that kind of works for them. You write about a blueprint. I mean, is there a blueprint really that everyone can use, or like, what are the different aspects of a successful morning routine?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And you're right. There's no cookie cutter, one size fits all. Everyone's different. Everyone gets up at different times, has different life scenarios. Some people are single. Some people are married. Some people have kids. Some people like their kids. Some people don't like their kids. I mean, everyone has different things going on with work and life. And But there's really no excuse to not have a plan when you get up in the morning. And just because I lay out this 0530 blueprint, it's what I do every morning. And it's a combination of a lot of different people and what they contributed to the book and this chapter specifically. People like Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Grant Cardone. I even quote some famous people like Beethoven and how unique his morning routine was. Every morning he would count out 60 coffee beans, not 57, not 62, 60 coffee beans every morning, because that's what he felt was the perfect amount of coffee. And if you do the math, it's like 8 espressos. So I'm sure Beethoven was driving his neighbors nuts. But the point is it was original to him. He made it his own. And the most effective thing in having a morning routine is doing something unique to you. But above everything is having a plan. Again, I don't care what time you get up. I'm concerned that you get up every time at the same time, every day. If it's 5:30, if it's 6:30, whatever, just every day is the same time and know what you're doing. Have a plan. I mean, there are so many morning routines out there. And I think a lot of us, especially people that hover over or are in the personal development space, you get sick and tired of hearing about morning routines. And there's some crazy ones out there. I mean, there's morning routines where people have you taking a 2-hour milk bath and then you're meditating for an hour and then you're journaling for 2 hours. And by the time you get done with your morning routine, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And how effective was it? I'd rather have the most effective 30-minute morning routine ever than dragging it out till 9 or 10 o'clock. And that's what I do. And I have my non-negotiable things I do. Mm-hmm. And I know right when I wake up and open my eyes, for at least the first 5 minutes, I know exactly what I'm doing. And then the morning is structured. And that leaves really no room for error. I mean, things could happen, but I know by the time I walk out the door and quote unquote go to work, even though I mostly work from home, I'm squared away and I've done all the things that I need to do to be prepared. I'm not running late. I'm not stopping at McDonald's on the way to work to grab some fast food and hope I get there on time. And I'm not prepared. I'm squared away. And it's because I have that plan. It's not because I'm so disciplined or because the army taught me all these amazing things or because I'm this high producer. It's because I have a plan and it really dummy proofs everything for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's just say somebody tries out a few things, you know, tries meditation, tries to wake up at 5:30 or 5 or 4 or whenever, but nothing seems to be kind of sticking. What would your advice be for these people who are like still figuring out what their morning routine looks like?
The best advice I would give them, because I put so much time and research into it, would be to try this one. And not, you don't even have to do the whole 0530 blueprint. It's the first chapter of the book because it's the most important thing. And that's how you start the day. If you just did the first 3 things on this, for anyone listening, if you want to change up, if you want to level up, if you want more energy, if you want more positivity, if you want more productivity, starting tomorrow morning, do these 3 things when you wake up, and I guarantee you things are going to be different. Now, I'm not promising you wealth and all these things, but it's just very, very simple. Just forget about the snooze button from now on. The snooze button is one of the most dangerous things in your house. Forget the guns and knives. That snooze button is deadly. It kills dreams, it kills productivity, and it hurts sleep. So forget the snooze button. Make sure you're getting up at the same time every day. Doesn't matter if you went out drinking until 2 a.m. last night or if you got to bed at 8:30. Wake up the same time every day. That's number one. It's non-negotiable. You'll catch up on sleep and you're going to get more productive sleep if you start doing these things. So right when you wake up, right when you open your eyes, before you even get out of bed, the first thing you should do is smile. I picked up on this a couple years ago, and it's one of the most impactful things that I've ever done in changing things up. I smile when I wake up, still laying there, looking up at the ceiling. I smile like I just hit the lottery, like I just fell in love again. And if you do that for 15 seconds, even if you had the shit day before, even if you got dumped, if you went bankrupt, if you lost your job, whatever, you're tricking your mind and your body. Your psychology and your physiology are being changed essentially because you're smiling. And that simple act of smiling, which most of us as human beings don't do enough. And it's such a beautiful thing, even if you have jacked up teeth. and there's things for that as well. But if you just smile for 15 seconds when you wake up, all of a sudden your body and your mind are like, well, hey, I don't know what happened. And yesterday wasn't a very good day. And we didn't get very good sleep last night, but I'm smiling, which means something must be going good. And right after that, I get up and I make the bed and I make it well. And it's one of the things we talk about in the Army the most is task completion. And all these little task completions add up to huge things. And then the next thing I do is I drink 16 ounces of room temperature water. So I woke up, I changed my physiology, I changed my psychology, I task completed something, making the bed, and I rehydrated myself after not drinking any water for probably 6, 8, 9 hours. So just those three things. If you just do those three things for the next 30 days, your whole morning is going to change because you're already forming new habits. You're already becoming more disciplined. You're already getting into a healthier routine. And just those three things, just the smiling, I'm telling you, just it's like, it's crazy what it does.
Yeah, because if we don't do these things, we get up and we're kind of maybe more impulse driven. But if we know, okay, there's just three things, I can do these three things, they're quite simple. Already you're building a plan.
Absolutely. And what sounds more effective? And this is something that's happening a lot right now. You're waking up, and if you're a Trump fan, you're checking to see if there's fraud and the count's going to come back in and we're going to keep it. Or if you're a Biden fan, you're checking your phone to see if it's still legit and him and Kamala are going to get in. Is that really the healthiest thing for you? Worrying about four people that, let's be honest, really aren't going to have that big of an impact on you. You may think they're going to. But at the end of the day, you can't control who's in the White House. You can't control coronavirus. You can't control who's wearing a mask and who's not. You can't control what the Kardashians are doing. But these are things that all of us seem to want to worry about. We should be worrying about our personal development. We should be worrying about our growth and how that's affecting us and our family. And if we're focusing on that from the second we get up, I think it's a lot more productive to wake up and smile and just think of one thing you're thankful for. I'm thankful to be here. I got buddies in the Army that got killed that aren't here anymore, that didn't get to have kids, that didn't get to fall in love again, that didn't get to experience all these amazing things that this country and this planet has for us. So I'm thankful, and I'm smiling because I'm thankful, even if I had a bad night's sleep or a bad day beforehand. And I think by doing these positive things first thing, not putting them off, not waiting until 8 a.m. or 10 a.m., the first thing you do is start out the day with a smile. I mean, things are looking pretty good already. And for me, it's only 5:30 in the morning. So I think that it's super important, and I would encourage all of your audience. And it's not strange for me because I have lots of guys email me telling me they thought about me at 6 a.m. smiling in their bed. I've gotten used to that. Yeah, you feel free to message me on Facebook or whatever. And let me know, because we get so much feedback about the smiling, Jessica. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's really about adjusting your focus and focusing on the right things, the things that you can control, and starting your day off in a positive way. I want to talk about the evening routine, because that kind of sets you up for the morning routine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the evening routine is the number one biggest thing about morning routines is the evening routine. The evening routine is something that I don't really see any morning routines talking about. Everything's talking about what time you wake up, what you have for breakfast. Do you do intermittent fasting? Do you not intermittent fast? Do you work out? Do you work out fasting? What time do you work out? Do you go for a walk? Do you do free? All these different things, including the meditation and the journaling and the milk baths and chanting and whatever. But it's all set up with the nighttime routine. Because if your nights are jacked up and you're just, you know, you're not getting good sleep, it becomes more difficult consistently to have these great mornings. So I do, I talk about a whole nighttime routine, and it includes very simple things, just like, you know, I kind of have a rule of no caffeine after 2 p.m. Before I sleep for at least 30 minutes, I try not to have any. And I'm guilty of this, and I need to work on it more, but I do my best not to have the laptop or really any screen time 30 minutes before I go to sleep. I just do simple things like I lay out what I'm going to wear the next day, the night before. I try to always be planned. I'm a big planning guy. You know, I like to, as far as sleep goes, I like to make sure that, you know, the room is really well equipped for me to sleep. I think of myself like a bat. I mean, if you want to mimic your sleep after one animal, it should be a bat. They're in dark caves that are chilly, no light. And it's that environment that I really like to create so I can get the best possible sleep. But having that consistency at night is big too. And we do a pretty big deep dive into that as well.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Well, let's talk a bit more about other aspects of self-development. You have a lot going on in your life. You do jujitsu, you're learning languages. What motivates you to kind of be doing all these things, and how are you teaching yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of this started around 2003 when the first Jason Bourne movie came out. And having been fresh out of the Army and still doing some things in a civilian capacity that were, we'll say, military related, I was obsessed with the idea of a Jason Bourne, not just because it was an awesome movie, but because I had actually met a few people along the way that were real life Jason Bournes. And I just loved the idea of having multiple passports and being able to speak different languages and being proficient in all these different things. And I just thought, as most guys do, I just thought it was really cool. Like every guy wants to be able to kick ass. And it's just, there's a lot of cool stuff from a male perspective about Jason Bourne. So I actually have a subchapter in the book called Becoming Jason Bourne. And I just really liked that idea. I've always liked languages. And like a lot of people, when it comes to languages, I had this really bad idea in my head for the longest time that I sucked at learning languages. And I think a lot of that stemmed from the way languages were and sometimes still are taught in schools. I mean, I know so many people that took Spanish for 4 years in high school and can't say more than hola, me llamo Brent. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's 4 years of Spanish and they literally can't order a meal at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And nowadays with technology and, you know, you have Babbel, you have Pimsleur, you have so many different programs. It's really, there's really no excuse if it's something you're interested in. There's really no excuse that you can't, not in a year or 3 years or 4 years, there's no excuse that in a matter of a month, you can't be basically conversational at a basic level in a vast majority of languages. Now granted, like Farsi and Vietnamese and Japanese, there are some very difficult languages out there, especially for the English speaker, but just, I mean, there's no reason you can't go out and learn how to speak Spanish as an English speaker. It's like one of the easiest languages to learn. Mm-hmm. Same thing with French, same thing with Brazilian Portuguese or even Italian. The romantic based languages are very easy to learn. And I know you and I discussed before we did the podcast that the next language I'm going to tackle is Mandarin. And I'm super excited about that because one, it's a hard language, but I look at the overall impact. Yes, it will be cool to go into my favorite Chinese restaurant and be the tall white boy in there speaking flawless Mandarin. I think that's going to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But what's going to be really cool is if I go to China or I'm just out and I'm able to communicate in yet another language that over 1.5 billion people speak. So I just looked at all those different skills. And when I was in the Army, I was a young guy in the Army. I had someone of my senior leadership tell me, skills are weapons. And you want as many weapons as you can have, Maggie. My last name is Magnuson. My nickname in the Army was Maggie. And he said, you want as many weapons as you can possibly have, Maggie. And you want to be as good with those many weapons as possible. I never forgot that. And I've always, you know, and I write about it in the book, how skills are weapons. You know, can you cook? That's a skill. That's a weapon. Can you speak another language? That's a skill. That's a weapon. Are you good with money? You know, these are all skills, but these are all really weapons. And if you look at the way the world is right now, it's almost like a battlefield out there. So it's important to have and be proficient in many skills and have, quote unquote, many weapons. And I kind of look at those like jujitsu and learning languages and being very well versed. I look at those as skills and weapons.
when you say skills and weapons, it's almost like a strategic kind of way of thinking about things. And you're motivated to, live up to your own potential, and you're open to like new possibilities. I mean, even just speaking about learning Mandarin, it wasn't about ordering food at a restaurant. It's about, what if I am dropped off in China and want to be there, like, for whatever reason? And you're kind of thinking beyond what is right directly in front of you right now.
Absolutely. I'm not concerned about ordering Peking duck. I can just walk into the restaurant and say in English, "I'd like to order the Peking duck." I'm worried about if I'm dropped off in Beijing or where, and not even dropped off, but just the idea of all of that. And you're so right. And to take it a step beyond that, as someone who's an author and a speaker, and is very soon in the next couple of months here, early 2021, going to be launching a coaching program. I want to be able to hit as big a market as possible. And how valuable is it from a tall, relatively handsome white guy from the suburbs of Chicago to be able to speak conversational Mandarin? That's an over billion person market that I'm able to tap into. And not because they were studious enough or whatever to learn English. It's because I took the time and energy and money and whatever, and invested in learning a difficult language for an English speaker. And now I'm able to communicate to hundreds of millions, over a billion Chinese people that I could potentially be getting involved in my coaching program. I could potentially be doing a speaking gig in China. It broadens your scope, your demographic for potential business. I mean, you're limited just speaking one language. I mean, if I'm able to speak, for example, my wife's a chiropractor. She has her own clinic, and she has people from every different walk of life come in. And I love it when I'm there, because when someone comes in that speaks Spanish, I get to practice. And even if they know I'm learning and I'm practicing, it's still the look on someone's face. Just knowing you're making that effort, even if you're butchering their language, which happens at the beginning, it's a real amazing feeling, the way they look at you like, wow, like, thank you for trying. Like when I speak to my Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach in Portuguese, even though he speaks perfect English, I mean, it's special, because he's like, wow, okay, you took the time. Like, and I'm not some super smart guy. I don't have an IQ of 190. Like, I'm just putting in the work, and the amount of opportunities that can open up for someone. Just think of it like this, Jessica, for your listening audience, especially if you're someone who's younger, if you're in your early 20s and you're out of college or you're out of the military and you're getting into the very competitive marketplace in whatever capacity. Let's say you're looking to get into big tech and you're applying at Google or you're applying at Facebook. You're a 24-year-old kid, he or she just got out of college, and your future looks bright. You're $150,000 in debt, but that's a whole nother topic. And you fill out your resume and the application and turn in your resume. And this person and this person and this person. You're all about the same age. You all got about the same grades. You're all right about the same. Besides, one may be a girl, one may be a guy. The person that has on their resume that they speak three languages or two languages compared to the other three people that just speak English, that could literally not just mean you getting the job. It could mean an extra $20,000, $40,000, $60,000 a year. It could mean the potential for travel. And with that travel could be the potential for meeting your future spouse. I mean, there's so many branches to this. And it's just like, and that's just all from listening to a Pimsleur CD in your car 30 minutes a day. And all of a sudden, you've got this great job, and you got hired over these other people that were your competition. You met your dream person, and now you're living abroad, and all because you spent 30 minutes a day in your car on your way to work that you would have wasted away anyways, learning a new language. So it's important stuff.
Yeah, I love how you translate, like, okay, it's 30 minutes in the car listening to a CD or something, to like all these amazing possibilities. Because the fact is, over time, once we build and build every day, we put in that effort, we put in just a little more work, the results compound over time, and your life will become extremely different just from these small things we do every day.
Absolutely. So the ROI, the return on the investment for that 30 minutes is just potentially life-changing. And so many people just either don't care, don't think it's important, or, and again, if that's not something you're interested in, then that's fine. But for me, like, you know, I don't have $12 million in the bank. I think I'm a handsome guy, but I don't look like Brad Pitt. I don't have a private jet. I don't have access to all these different, so I have to work hard for everything I have. And if I'm able to speak multiple languages, that just puts me one more step ahead of my competition, regardless of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just learning languages, it's learning any kind of skill or getting better at, you know, any kind of thing. I mean, a lot of people might start something and then not be able to really stay with it. How do we stay disciplined?
I think it's understanding what the end goal is, understanding what the objective is. I mean, I know grown men that sit around on Sundays and yell at a TV, and they're basically yelling at other grown men getting paid millions of dollars to throw or kick a ball around, yet they're broke, or they're in an unhealthy relationship, or they don't spend enough time with their kids, or they're not engaged with their spouse. And it's like, these are all decisions. There are very few things we control. Like I said, I can't control. My vote is important, sure. I can't control who's in the White House. I can't control what's going on with the coronavirus. I can't control who's wearing a mask. I can't control a lot of things, but I can control the standards I have, and I can control the decisions I make. I can also, very importantly, control who I surround myself with, and who we surround ourselves with, and what we take in is all in our control. You may not think it is if you've been hanging around the same people for 20 years, but I promise you, you have complete control of who you spend your time with, who you give your time to, and you have complete control of the content you consume. You can sit and watch CNN or Fox News for 6 hours. You can get sucked into Netflix for a half a day, or you can cut that in half and work on yourself. You can cut that in half and actually read something that's positive and is going to enhance your personal development. And unfortunately, I don't think enough people are doing that.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, if you live a life by default, you're going to be routed to the Netflix, to the news, to the articles, the endless YouTube and things like that. But it takes a little bit extra to move in a different direction, change that inertia, and go into things that maybe none of your friends have explored, or, you know, nobody knows about except you and all the people you talk to.
Exactly. I know grown people in their 30s and 40s, Jessica, that right now know more about a political candidate or a flipping Kardashian than they do their own personal development. They know more about what Hunter Biden's up to, or what Trump did or didn't do, or whatever. They know more about what Kim and Khloe are up to. Is Kanye running? They know more about this stuff, or they know more about a sports team and how many completions this guy's got as a wide receiver than they do about their own bank account and their own house. Their houses are out of order, but they know about all this other stuff that has no impact. The Kardashians, I don't say that to bang on them. They're doing phenomenal things. God bless them. They're making a ton of money, and it seems like they're enjoying life. So good on them. That doesn't do anything for me. I like sports. I watch sports, but I'm not going to get consumed to the point where it's taking away from my bottom line, for my family, for my productivity, for my effectiveness as a person. And again, like, if more people just started focusing on what you can actually control instead of all these other things that really, at the end of the day, listen, I'm a Green Bay Packer fan living in Chicago. I can tell you right now, I pull for the Packers every single week. And I was pleased to see them beat San Francisco last week. But let me tell you something. If they lose, it stings for about 3 minutes. And guess what? I'm back on, because Aaron Rodgers and the rest of the Green Bay Packers are not paying me. They're not putting food on my family's table. They're not taking care of my wife and kid. It's just really staying in your lane and focusing on what you can actually control. And when you start doing that, and it took a long time, I got to the dance late, but I'm here and I'm dancing mm-hmm. with every pretty girl. I'm making the best of it. And mm-hmm. I promise you, when you start applying this stuff, things change so fast. It's scary.
Mm. Yeah. This idea of staying in your own lane. It's like most people don't realize that they're not in their lane. They're in everyone else's lane except their own. When did you really come to terms with this and realize this?
It's a good question. I don't have like an exact date, or it was probably around 2010. Like I said, I had been done with most of the military stuff and I was living in Vegas. I was still kind of a people pleaser, meaning for some crazy reason, I still cared way too much what people thought about me. And it's not that I don't have feelings. It's just, I cared way too much. I should probably say it like this. I cared way too much about what the insignificant or wrong people thought about me. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I just sometimes did things or behaved a certain way or always seemed to want to please the wrong people or almost make everyone happy. And then when I met Tony Robbins in 2010, we had a very short, very impactful 3 or 4 minute conversation. And I've taken that with me. And basically he said flat out, don't give a shit what anyone thinks about you. You worry about you. You drive forward and you are going to lead by example, and your results and your success and your happiness will speak for themselves. And that right there will attract the right people. And I'm probably paraphrasing. It was 10 years ago. And mm-hmm. I write about meeting him in the book. And it was a big day for me. But that was a pretty pivotal moment, because at that point, I realized like a light bulb went off. It was like, boom, I need to apply this and all the amazing stuff I learned in the military. I need to combine these two. And once that happened, things really started taking off.
That was a pivotal moment where you really decided for yourself, enough of, everyone else's stuff and their opinions and their ideas about you. You're going to focus on you and not mind whatever anyone else is doing or thinking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's powerful, because I don't know why. Why do you think we get caught up in everyone else's opinions and beliefs and, all the news and all these things, when it obviously is not really serving us? It's not helping us.
Yeah. I mean, the best answer I could give you is what I think is, it wasn't as bad years ago, but now with, all of the almost all the instant gratification, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all this stuff where, you can literally, talking about coaching, I'm in the process of, and I've got some great people on the team. I'm surrounding myself with people much smarter than me, much more accomplished than me in this space. And we're building something that I think is going to be really fantastic. And in learning all this stuff and building this, you start to realize that you are the average of who you're surrounding yourself with. There's people out there right now on Instagram that are borrowing $10,000 or $15,000 from their parents, pulling out that amount in cash, fanning it out in $100 bills, standing in front of someone else's Lamborghini, taking that picture, putting it on Instagram and saying, I'm a coach, let me teach you how to make money. And right after that picture snapped, they're giving that back to mom and dad. They're walking away from the Lamborghini that's not theirs. And you don't know. I mean, it's not too hard to figure out, but in this instant gratification time that we're in right now, where, it's not like back in the day, if you watched the Seinfeld episode, if you missed it, you had to wait for the replay, or you just had to hope someone recorded it on VHS or whatever. Now it's just boom, go to YouTube, boom, go on your phone, boom, go to Google. So I think because so much is so readily available, and because of all the stuff on these apps with people making themselves prettier and all these different things, I think it gets so important for the outside. And the vast majority of these people are probably not doing well in their personal lives. They're probably not as successful as they claim to be. I'm sure most of them don't have anywhere near as much money as they say they do. And most of them probably aren't walking the walk. It's certainly something frustrating too, especially being labeled in this personal development or this self-help space. It's like, I feel like I have something to contribute to the market. I feel like my military experience, my time as an entrepreneur, and the different experiences I've had, the fact that I'm 44 and I've done a lot and been through a lot, I feel like I can actually confidently, not that a young person couldn't, maybe it just took me longer, but I feel like I can confidently put something out and say, hey, this isn't just what I think. This is the stuff that I've lived. This is what's worked. This is what hasn't. And these are all the people I've surrounded myself with. And this is what works for all of them. So here's a framework, if you will, a blueprint or a structure, a framework to work inside of. And here are some great ideas on how you can level up in different areas of your life. And I don't know that enough people are doing that structurally the right way.
Got it. Yeah, it sounds like you're extremely driven to give your insight and really help others. And you're focused on interacting with others in a very different way. You're not trying to impress people, or you're also not impressed by things that may be fake, you know, as you pointed out with social media. And now you're trying to pass along this wisdom that you've learned over the years and help people.
Yeah, that's the goal. You know, I mean, it's to be able to put out and, you know, to really leave something behind. I mean, it's being a new, I just got married for the first time a couple of years ago, and I have a 9-year-old stepdaughter now. And it's like, everything changed when that happened. I went from single Brent to married Brent and dad in one day. And that all really shifted my perspective, because there's a 9-year-old girl now, and her biological dad's really not involved in her life. So I'm the guy, like, and I didn't get the manual. I didn't see the playbook for Stepdad of the Year. So a lot of this is like, you know, a lot of this happens on the fly, and it's the driving force behind everything I'm trying to do. And there's no bad teams, is a saying that we have. There's only bad leaders. And the last thing I want to be is a bad leader. I want to build a strong team, and I want to lead from the front, and I want to lead by example with this coaching program. And I want my stepdaughter to see that. I want her to see what hard work is. I want her to see what integrity is. And I want her to know that I led by example. And because Brent did that and he worked really hard, that's how I'm going to do it too. And that's the driving force behind pretty much everything right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge shift to have this really lifelong responsibility at this point for you of setting the right example and being a role model, being a leader.
Yeah. And it's terrifying. I mean, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't. It's that's a 9-year-old girl. It's not a car. It's not a stuffed animal. That's a real thing. And there's real impact. If I'm acting a fool every day and it's everything, you know, the way I talk to her mother, the way I treat her mother, she's already learning and she doesn't even know it. But when she's older and she's dating, she's going to want a guy to talk to respectfully and treat her the way I treat her mom. And if some guy isn't, she's going to recognize that and say, no. You don't call me names and swear at me. You don't put your hands on me like that. That's not how this works. So it's all those little things like that. And the fact that, you know, she's in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, she's going to be able to defend herself and have that confidence, and just all the other little things that it's exciting, because it's almost like a project that's ongoing. I mean, am I raising a kid, or in all actuality, am I training a future adult? And I know that word training sounds like I have a cocker spaniel, but you know, this idea of raising a kid, it's like, no, like I'm preparing this 9-year-old girl to go out into the real world. And God forbid, when she's 18 or 19, if something happens and I get in a car accident or I'm not around anymore, I want to know, even if she's only 18 or 19, that she's going to be able to go out there and fend for herself and have plenty of skills and weapons in her own tool belt.
Wow. I think that's profound in terms of you're preparing a future adult. And same goes for you. You are also preparing yourself, and you're developing these skills day by day to kind of move yourself forward in the bigger plan.
Well, I'm also, Jessica, probably preparing myself for all the knuckleheads that want to take her out to dinner or take her to prom. I'm going to probably prepare myself for that, because I know how I was as a teenager. And Yeah. But at the end of the day, I guess that's kind of half jokingly, but yeah, at the end of the day, it's, I've never had a more important job than stepdad. And, it's exciting. And I tell you, it is challenging. It is humbling. And, I'm playing catch up. Same with this. I got to the dance very late, but you know what? I'm here and I'm gonna work as hard as I possibly can to make sure I do a good job.
Mm-hmm. You said humbling. Let's talk about the humility and the ego. And you also said, you know, you got there late. I mean, what does that really mean to you?
Well, I guess what it means to me is, like my brother and a lot of my friends, I'm 44 years old. So a lot of my friends in their 30s and 40s that already have kids and have had those kids and raised them since birth. I came into Emma's life when she was 6. So I got to the party late, and, you know, or I got to the game late. That doesn't mean I can't play super hard and win. It just means I've got some catch up to do. And I joked that, you know, I didn't get the manual on how to be a great stepdad. I have examples. My own dad, I was very fortunate. I had an amazing childhood. My mom and dad were super squared away, very awesome people. Mom was a school teacher. Dad was a fabrication specialist for the power company, and super engaged, super involved, no drugs, no booze, no drama, never saw them fight. So I had very, very good examples. Every day my dad left for work, he'd give my mom a kiss. Or she got home, she'd give him a kiss. I never once saw them fight. I know that sounds crazy. You can ask my brother. I never once saw them fight or yell at each other in anger or use bad language towards each other, like nothing. So I had, and it was crazy because I had friends whose parents were divorced and hated each other and had separate Christmases and Thanksgivings. And so I had a really good teacher in my dad on not just how to treat women, but how to parent and how to be there. And so I kind of lean on that. At the same time, I think a lot of it just comes down to, you know, to figuring it out. And it's just a big responsibility for me. You know, her biological dad is interesting in the least, and he's not around much. So and I'm okay with that. And I actually prefer that because I want this job and I want it full time, and I want to be the guy, win or lose, even though I know we're going to win, I want to be the guy to prepare her for that big, bad, scary world. Cause, and I tell her all the time, and it's something I write about in the book, when you get older, Emma, you're going to understand this, but there are three types of people in this world. There are sheep, there are sheep dogs, and there are wolves. Roughly 80% of our population are sheep. They go about their day-to-day lives. They listen to the mainstream media. They just do what they have to do. Their parents were sheep. Their kids are sheep, and it's probably going to keep going. Then the other 10% are wolves. These are the really bad people, the murderers, the rapists, the really, really bad people. All they want to do is slaughter the sheep. And then there's the sheepdog. That's the last 10%. And the sheepdog is the protector. In the animal kingdom, one sheepdog can protect an entire flock or herd of sheep. That sheepdog's main objective every single day is to protect the sheep. It's up earliest. It's the most well-prepared. It's the most ready for a seriously bad situation. And if we translate that into the real world, the sheepdog is by far and always the most well-prepared. It's the most well-trained. It's the most well-read. It's the most confident because it's been put in hard situations before. And the sheepdog is always there to respond and answer that call. And it's okay if you're a sheep, and it's probably not your fault. But if you are, and if you're a wolf, even more so, you should look to some of the qualities that the sheepdog has and maybe try to adopt some of them. And I promise you, the number one rule that I have with Emma, and especially with her being 9 and you know, going into school, and kids are brutal, we have one very simple rule in this house, and that is you don't bully anyone, and under no circumstances does anyone bully you. Never. And that's something I take very serious. And I know she does too. It's probably like living with a drill sergeant half the time, but a drill sergeant that smiles a lot, Jessica. But yeah, it's important stuff to me. And there's kind of that yin and yang there. My wife has a much more kind of, it's almost like the good cop, bad cop. And I'm okay with being the bad cop, because if she's ever put into a really bad situation, and most of us are in our life, more than one usually, I'm very confident that she's going to be able to handle that better than most.
Wow, there's a lot there that you just said. And the metaphor of the sheep, the wolves, and the sheepdog, it just makes things clear. And it's okay that there's just mostly sheep out there. And it's okay that there's wolves out there. I mean, that's the fact of the world. And to be a sheepdog, to kind of protect those around you and to serve them and to devote your life to that service, that's a very, very different way of living than how the others live.
It is. And, you know, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
The that sheepdog life is, it's a serious thing. It's a lifetime commitment, and it's something that, you know, needs to be taken very serious. But at the end of the day, I think it's one of the most important things that, even if you just realize and understand what those are, the sheepdog and the wolves, Jessica, there's an amazing quote that I would like to read. I'll make it quick. It's from a guy I tremendously respect. We're actually both in the same speakers bureau, Eagle Rise Speaker Bureau. He's a lieutenant colonel, retired from the U.S. Army. His name is Dave Grossman. And he wrote a book called On Combat. He was the first guy that I introduced me to this concept of the sheepdogs. It's really an amazing thing. And that quote is, "In nature, the sheep, real sheep, are born as sheep. Sheepdogs are born that way, and so are wolves. They didn't have a choice, but you are not a critter. As a human being, you can be whatever you want to be. It is a conscious moral decision. If you want to be a sheep, then you can be a sheep, and that is okay. But you must understand the price you will pay. When the wolf comes, you and your loved ones are going to die if there is not a sheepdog there to protect you. If you want to be a wolf, you can be one. But the sheepdogs are going to hunt you down, and you will never rest, have safety, trust, or love anyone. But if you want to be a sheepdog and walk the warrior's path, then you must make a conscious and moral decision every day to dedicate, equip, and prepare yourself to thrive in that toxic, corrosive moment when the wolf comes knocking at the door." I get chills reading that, because it's so powerful and it's so real. And that wolf isn't just that wolf in the animal world, if you will. That wolf is in corporate America. That wolf is on the playground. That wolf is in schools. That wolf is in politics. That wolf is in Wall Street. That wolf is everywhere. And the better prepared you are for that wolf, the better off you're going to be in the long term. And I know I got a little long-winded, Jess, but I really appreciate you letting me get that out, because I've read that thing probably 1,000 times. I got chills reading it, because it, especially at the end, like, it's so powerful and it's so real.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, that is like, it really does clarify things, and it's ultimately your choice. Which one do you want to be, and which role do you want to play? And the sheepdog's role really is the warrior role. I mean, maybe people won't even recognize you for your efforts or acknowledge that or won't even notice. But at the end of the day, you are the sheepdog, and you know it. And that's what matters.
Yeah. It's important to know, I guess, where you're at in the food chain. And it's important to know that regardless of where you may be in that food chain, it's never too late for change. And just because if you're a sheep, there's a very good chance your parents were sheep and their parents were sheep, but it doesn't mean you can't break that cycle. And again, just like you said, 80%+ of the people on this planet are sheep, and that's okay. And that's how it is, but that doesn't mean you can't be a more prepared sheep. And what's the wolf? I mean, the wolf is essentially the bully. What does the bully on the playground look for? The bully doesn't look for a confident kid. Even though he's probably not going to do well, he doesn't look for the confident kid that's going to stand up for himself and fight back. He looks for the weak, helpless, the easiest possible victim. He looks for the kid already cowering in the corner, not the confident kid, not the kid that even though he's going to get beat up is still going to fight back because he's that guy, because he's got some sheepdog in him. So even if you're still a sheep, you can be a very well-equipped and very well-prepared sheep. And it's a lot less likely that the wolf's going to come after you than it is the most helpless of sheep. So there's levels to this, and it's very complex, and we could get into all the different branches of sheep and sheepdogs and wolves. But I think the more qualities of the sheepdog you have and the less qualities of the wolf you have, the less of a sheep you'll eventually be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. No, this is a really powerful way to describe how we can really operate in this world and who we're choosing to become and what we feel our responsibilities are in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And thank you so much for joining and sharing about morning routines, evening routines, your motivation for learning, and kind of that creating that domino effect with, like, just start with the 30 minutes a day, or just even wake up and put on a smile in the morning. And it's these small things that really ultimately make the difference when they're done serially and just that little thing every day. So thank you.
Absolutely. And like I say, it's when you have these monster tasks in front of you and these huge, massive goals that things get complicated and things get less likely to get done. When all you got to do is get up, smile, make your flip in bed, drink some water, boom, you're done. Now, obviously, in the big picture, we'd like you to do more. But if you just do that, open your eyes, smile for 15 seconds, make the flip in bed to the point where you're proud of it, and drink some room temperature water. Just do that before you walk out of that bedroom, and already you're ahead of 90% of your competition out there. I promise you.
Very powerful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, friend, I hope you enjoyed this show and found it helpful in your own life. I want to ask you a favor. I would love it if you could leave an Apple Podcast review for this show. You can do that on your podcast app. It would mean so much to me, and I would love to hear what you think about the show. I make the show for you to help you on your journey, and I love sharing these great conversations with you. Thanks so much for listening.